Good afternoon, Columbus. And guess what? It's Wednesday, and it's Dano with Talk of the Town. And it's pretty warm outside, and I think we're probably topping up to probably 91, 92 degrees, nonetheless. Hey, also, there are a bunch of other things that are happening, too. As a matter of fact, you know that this weekend is going to be the Hot Times Community Music Festival that's at 240 Parsons Avenue, right there on the lawn of the health department. And remember, if you are a community festival volunteer, make sure you wear your 2008 t-shirt because it is a volunteer appreciation party on Friday. So, and that's going to kick off around 6 o'clock. So make sure you're there for that. So that should be a whole bunch of fun. And honestly, it's the whole festival's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it's Saturday, they start at 11, and then on Sunday, it starts at 11. It goes from 11-11 until on Saturday, and 11 until 9 on Saturday. Well, Sunday, my bad. Anyway, also, down there's going to be a really cool book that's going to be for sale, and apparently some of the author's going to be down there, and it's called Images of America. It's Columbus, the musical crossroads, and the authors are David Myers, Arnett Howard, James Leffler, and Candace Watkins. So, and that's on Arcadia Publishing. You can check it out on the web at www.arcadiapublishing.com, and that's $19.99. So, believe it or not, if you get one down there, you can probably get one of the authors to sign it. So, let's get with our guest today. Today, I have two really interesting people that were passed to me by Ben Redman, who's with Simply Living, and I think he's still in Hawaii, so a shout out to Ben and him having fun in the sun, like we're not here, haha, but we don't have the ocean. Nonetheless, I have Betsy Shipley and Gunther Pfaff sitting in the studio today. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
And basically, today what they're going to tell us about is something that is really close and near and dear to their heart, and it's called Tempe, which I didn't know what it was. I went to their website, checked it out, and then I thought, okay, it looks like a burger, and I never tasted it, so I was curious to see what it would be all about. And as a matter of fact, they brought me a piece, and yum. And honestly, the rest of you should be jealous because this is going to be really, really good. And I get to share with some of my buds when I get back to the festival grounds. But nonetheless, good afternoon. And who would like to go first, Gunther or Betsy?
I can go first.
Okay. Oops. Hi. Okay. Here we go. Now, let's talk about the history of Tempe.
Well, the history of Tempe basically started in Indonesia probably about a couple hundred years ago. And the reason that I got interested in Tempe was that I read an article in Organic Gardening in the late 70s talking about Tempe and talking about the high protein content of Tempe. And because I was a vegetarian, I decided, well, that's something that I would like to look into. And at the time, the East Lansing Food Co-op was selling the little tempeh kits. It had the soybeans, and it had the culture, and it had the instructions. So I gave one of these kits to my partner husband for his birthday, and Gunther started making it just for the two of us. It was very successful, and we thought, wow, this is really great. And then we decided that we would perhaps start a small business on our farm. And we went into the Betsy's Tempe business. And from there, it was sort of like a historic moment when we started. We were in business for close to 9 years. We had a wonderful following of people. We sold the product in restaurants and food co-ops and supermarkets. We covered basically all of Southeast Michigan and part of Toledo at the time. And then we decided that because we were the only ones that perhaps started a new method for making tempeh, we patented the process, and we thought, well, this is something that maybe a small business or a big business would like to get involved in. And we tried encouraging large businesses to produce Betsy's tempeh, but no one was really interested. So we had to make the decision, do we try and put up a new, larger facility to cover a large area, or do we retire? So we decided that we would retire and see what happened after that, so Gunnar can take off.
And see, and that's an amazing tale overall, because all of a sudden you say you want to see where it would take off after that. What's interesting is now that the internet up and running, you're looking at access to billions of people worldwide, so that all of a sudden, not only can they do it here, but they can do it anywhere on the planet as long as they have fresh water. I mean, but you're gonna need that and electricity. But it's so amazing that even from the small standpoint of everything that I had seen on your website, that I didn't know what it was. And I enjoy food. We were talking off the air about food, and pretty much I like to eat. But nonetheless, I also like to cook. I also like to create. And so this seems like something that someone could do and be that creative. Gunter?
Well, the system that we've developed is quite simple and ends up being a superior product. And even though it came from Indonesia originally, people over there are actually interested in duplicating our system. And this could even be done like in poorer countries, because you could do it with solar. It takes very little energy. All you're doing is supplying a little bit of air while the soybeans incubate, and that can be done with minimal solar. And in any kind of warm climate, you probably don't even have to heat the water. You just start with warm water, and that's it.
I'll have to bring this up to a friend of mine named Tim Chavez, who does solar energy, and we'll chat about this. That's really interesting, because he had done a couple of things with solar that was just really, really, really interesting. So what are you doing now as far as, if since you're not making tempeh, but I noticed that you still, on your website, that you have an instructional DVD on how to make the device.
Right.
The incubator.
Yeah, we've basically made the information public that we had two patents on, and this allows people to individually make it with just a picnic cooler, or you could make it like for a restaurant or in a restaurant or as a business. And we've actually made the process a lot cheaper than when we first made it, because we were totally in stainless steel, and that's fairly expensive. And now we're into food-approved plastic items, and so it's a lot easier and cheaper to make it.
So since you've been in Ohio, have you found anything to closely resemble what the two of you have made?
No, the standard tempeh that's in the stores, I mean, almost worldwide, you could say, is made in plastic bags. And that's been that way since 1964. And so what we have done is innovated and made it on a tray with a water bath as a way to keep it warm or cool at the right temperature, basically. And that produces a much superior product. And the response by the customers in Michigan was astounding, because we even charged 50 cents more per pound than the competition. And we could have easily charged 100% more, because people, once they got used to it, they were addicted.
And you'd mentioned that the Indonesians they used to do it in a banana leaf.
Yeah, and originally, yes, it was wrapped in a banana leaf, and they leave it because it's basically warm and humid there. It would ferment over a two-day period with the cultures that they use. And in this country, we use a very pure culture. It's called Rhizopus oligosporus. It's a real mouthful.
No doubt.
And we can do it in 22 hours here. And there's one difference that people might be interested in between the Indonesian tempeh and the American tempeh is the Indonesian tempeh, because it has several other cultures in it that ferments the soybeans or cultures the soybeans, it generates vitamin B. But in the American tempeh, the way we make it with this pure culture of the rhizopus, it does not generate vitamin B. So even though it's like a perfect food, you still have to try to get your vitamin B some other way. And some of the literature that when you look up on the internet or in books, it says tempeh has vitamin B, but that's only true for the Indonesian tempeh.
And it's fascinating to note because, again, off the air, you had mentioned how now in Indonesia, they do it the same way as it's done in the West, you know, plastic bags.
Yeah, it's amazing that, you know, since 1964, nobody could come up with a better way of making it. They're sticking it in plastic bags. And then over here, because you want the product to be pasteurized, they actually pasteurize it in the plastic bag, which is not something I would recommend because you don't want to heat plastic up that much.
Right.
So we just basically bake the tempeh off on our tray at 225 degrees, and then it's the culture stops, and then you can just put it in your refrigerator or your freezer.
And one bag would make how much? I mean, are we talking a one-pound bag, a two-pound bag?
Yeah, we recommend starting with dry roasted, dehulled, unsalted soybean halves, which have been developed in recent years for snack food. And that takes a lot of the work of making tempeh out of it because you don't have to split the beans, dehull the beans, and cook the beans. You can just essentially say, take 1 pound of those soybean halves, soak them overnight, and you end up 22 hours later with 2 pounds of tempeh.
Wow. So what about the culture? Where do you get that at also?
We've been buying from a little mom-and-pop type laboratory in Washington State. They produce, like, they have an approved laboratory. They produce the culture. And they refresh their own culture from the government laboratory every once in a while to make sure the strain stays the same and doesn't change and become something else.
Is that the only place you can get it? I mean,
no, there's about two that I know of in the United States. It's the one in Washington. It's called Gem Cultures. And then the original farm in Tennessee is still making powdered tempeh starter, I think. And then now there's other countries coming into it, like there's somebody in Amsterdam, I think, that you can find on the internet. If you look for tempeh starter or tempeh culture, you'll find probably two or three suppliers.
You know, I'm surprised that even in some of the natural food stores here in Columbus, that you don't see that often.
Well, I think that you would see the tempeh in the freezer. The tempeh that's produced in the United States is a frozen food. So you would probably, if you look real closely, you would find it in the freezer. You would find it probably in like a Whole Foods or maybe the Clintonville Food Co-op. But you're not going to find it in a Kroger's and you're not going to find it in any of the regular supermarkets.
Yeah, well, again... there's another health food store on High Street called Sunflower.
Okay.
And I always wander around there. That's where I get my soy-based vitamins from. So I'm surprised I didn't see it in there. Maybe I just wasn't looking for it.
Well, maybe what you have to do is you either have to ask or look in the freezer, and you might find it tucked away behind something else in the freezer. But if it's a natural food store, it probably should be carrying at least one brand of tempeh.
Okay, I'll have to do that after I get.
Yeah,
through
give
this
it a
weekend.
Try.
Oh yeah,
give it a
you
try.
Know, I'll go wander through. I'll always find something. As a matter of fact, that's one of the places where I go to get fennel. Because,
okay.
You can get a big bag of fennel for less than $2. So it's anything I need when I'm cooking.
Right.
That's the place I
right.
go. And it's really fascinating, and that one of the items is that this. The device. I call it the device because it's an incubator. It's an incubator, and it's what I can't seem to fathom. You know, I looked at, again, looking on the website, I couldn't figure out where something went, and what I couldn't figure out was the tray. How do you get the tray to fit? Do you have to cut it or something? Or, I mean, how can you get that tray to fit? That's what I'm still trying to figure out.
Well, what we did is we bought a little Rubbermaid incubator, or it's a picnic cooler, and I think it's 48 quarts on sale. And if you, at the same time that you get the little cooler, you look at the tray section, you'll find a tray that's like 10 by 15 inches.
A cookie tray.
Cookie tray, okay.
And that fits right in it without doing anything. And then just to simplify things, we used 4 6-inch tall glasses to put underneath the tray and fill it with water up to that level, and then set the tray on top of the glasses. So you don't have to build a support or anything. You just use 4 glasses 6 inches tall. And then it sits there, and you just close the lid, and you keep it warm at 89 degrees, and you supply a little bit of air that bubbles into it, and you don't do anything. You can do it makes 2 pounds of tempeh, and you can, the preparation time takes about 35, 40 minutes at the most, and then it just does its own thing.
So we've talked a lot about the incubator, the history of tempeh, and I don't know about most of the listeners, but I'm sure you want to know, what does it taste like? It tastes really, really good. And understand, one of the other things, Betsy had mentioned a cookbook, different recipes, and even, again, going back to their website, because I read it extensively, whatever you marinate tempeh in, it's going to take on that flavor. Is that correct?
That's right. It's somewhat like probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with tofu. Tofu is very bland, and tofu absorbs the marinade that you put it in. Tempeh will do the same thing. The advantage that you have with tempeh is that it actually has a better mouthfeel than tofu, and it actually has fiber. So if you want to make, say, like barbecued ribs, what you would do after you take the tempeh out, you would cut the tempeh into strips. You'd make your barbecue sauce or buy your barbecue sauce. You'd let the ribs sit in the barbecue sauce overnight, and then the next day you'd put them in the oven and bake them off. And when we had a potluck and we served the barbecued ribs, I think that they were basically inhaled by most of the people, and they were gone in a matter of minutes before anything else on the table was even eaten. So tempeh has a lot of advantages that it can do. You can do anything you want to with it. Stir fry, you can put it on the barbecue or the outside grill. So, you know, the sky's the limit. There are several cookbooks out on tempeh, and many cookbooks that actually have tempeh as recipes. And on the internet, there is just many, many, many recipes with tempeh. The last one that I looked at the other day was a tempeh sushi, which I'm really anxious to try and see how that goes.
Would that be a fish flavoring that you would put on it or something?
I wouldn't put a fish flavoring in it, but whatever flavor. I'm not that familiar with sushi myself, but I would just try it with, like, your rice. Put your rice down on your nori sheet and maybe some grated tempeh that you've already flavored, your little bit of radish, a little bit of green onion, little bit of carrot, and roll it up, and then whatever dipping sauce you want to try, like a soy dipping sauce or a peanut dipping sauce, the sky's the limit with sushi, I think.
So actually, that's a California roll. I was thinking.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking more of regular. And that's called sashimi.
Oh.
But nonetheless, yeah, that's the raw tuna, the raw
salmon,
and all
that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And oh boy, I eat that too.
I'm not too familiar with sashimi.
Oh yeah, I lived in Japan for 3 years, so
okay.
I got real used to of the food. I had to get used to, be only from the standpoint I lived off the base, so I had to get used to what everybody else was eating. It's either eat or go all the way back to the base and eat. I'll just eat what you're eating. So
yeah.
I would go, what is that? So yeah, I learned all about octopus and squid and everything else that can either move, slither, or climb. It was okay.
Right.
You know? And then plus, I mean, a vegetable is a vegetable, and you learn which ones you like and which ones you don't. But yeah, this is interesting. I'd never thought about a California roll that way.
Yeah.
Especially with carrots and
and
radish. Oh yeah. See, now I'm still thinking of how I'm going to do this, but nonetheless.
Well, a nice way of serving tempeh is with like a nice peanut sauce.
Mm.
It's a peanut sauce you can make, you know, without even thinking, with a little bit of hot water and peanut butter, a little bit of grated garlic, a little bit of ginger, a little bit of hot pepper seeds in it, and you can either dip your tempeh in it, or if you're making a stir fry, that could be your sauce for your stir fry.
Yeah.
So it's endless. It's,
oh, no doubt, no doubt. And it's funny that something that is that nutritious. And again, we were talking about, have you ever, you know, decided to talk to a school system or talk to any other system that would want to have this as a protein? And you had mentioned how everything is the federal food system, food grant program, and all that with the prisons.
Well, we did try that when we were in business to sell it to the schools, and they decided the cheap meat that they get doesn't allow them to buy any tempeh. They get things for next to nothing, and whether it's good or not, that's not apparently the question. And so that didn't go anywhere, but it was really funny with we had a lot of the grated tempeh we made, you know, cut it up small so you could put it in spaghetti sauce or chili or tacos. And we had a lot of that accumulating, and we said, well, we should go to talk to MSU and see whether they know about it, and they could use that in their dorms. And so we made a presentation with the grated, and we said, oh, here's all the good things you can make with it. It's ready to go. You don't, no work involved. And they said, oh, very interesting. Goodbye. We'll be in touch. And 2 days later, they showed up with a truck and cash and said, we want to buy all your patties. So they bought 10 cases of patties for two dorms of foreign students that were then hooked on our patties. And so the institutions, when they need to, will appreciate it.
But even in these days and times, specifically with all the meat recalls, yes, that we're having,
yes,
you know,
yes,
this would seem to be the better mousetrap.
Right, right. But we have to find people that want to make it
commercially.
Right.
Because people can make it themselves, but not everybody wants to make everything from scratch, and some people don't really have the time. So if you could find people that want to make it commercially and then deliver it to restaurants and to stores that you could buy it on the market, that would be the way to go.
Yeah, but again, aren't we talking shelf life here? Because even
no, it's frozen. Basically, you deliver it to the stores frozen,
okay,
and it, you know, it's good for 6 months, but usually it doesn't last a week once people discover it.
Well, everything has to have an expiration. That's why I was wondering, yeah, you know, what yeah, the shelf life is, you know, because let's face it, for a bean or a peanut or something like that, yeah, I mean, the shelf life is forever.
No, we had the opposite trouble. It moved out of the stores too fast. And what happened is a lot of it was word of mouth. Like somebody would find it in a Kroger's or in a co-op and say, oh, this is fantastic. And then all of a sudden a restaurant would say, hey, can we have this, you know? And I mean, for them, it was really a moneymaker, because we were in the store once and somebody told us, oh, so-and-so restaurant down the street serves the best tempeh burger we ever ate. And we knew it was our tempeh. So we went there after the demo and we said, well, how do you make it? Well, they had a grill. They put a little Paul Newman salad dressing on it. They flipped our burger tempeh burger through it, put it in a bun with a little lettuce and tomato, and charged $6.50 for it. So they loved it. So did the customers.
You know, this is interesting, because now one of the thoughts that's racing through my head is that you see how they always have on some of these television shows the chefs. What can you do that's different and unique? And how someone could do an entire vegetarian meal using tempeh.
Yeah, we always talked about that. It would be nice if we had a grant, for example, so you could do, like, the chefs in a whole town, invite them. We would produce the tempeh, and we would say, here's the tempeh. What do you want to make with it?
Ooh.
You know, and have a
iron
cook-off,
chef.
Have an Iron Chef-type cook-off, and that would introduce tempeh to the whole community. After one of those, everybody would know about it. It would be perfect.
Oh, no doubt.
So do you know any grant writers?
No, but off the air, I'll tell you where you can apply. And honestly, they may say, ooh, we can do this. So,
yes.
I mean, there are a number of different organizations available that pretty much, when it comes to food and nutrition,
they're more than willing to just write the check. And that's just absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, because like Betsy's son, for one of our birthdays, he made us a tempeh cutlet, breaded cutlet. It was like a whitefish, you know. He was a chef. He knew what he was doing, you know. And then the next time, he pesto crusted tempeh.
Ooh.
I mean, you know, it's if you have the skill, if you have the imagination.
Yeah,
there's you do.
Yeah,
yeah. You'll never be the same.
No, because I'll probably eat it all.
Well, you're gonna come visit, and then we can play around in the kitchen.
Well, no doubt. Well, I'll have. Yeah, I still have your email. But speaking of email, what's your web address so that people can come see?
It's www.maketempeh.org.
And say that again.
www.maketempeh.org.
And tempeh, you spell it.
With an H, like tempeh in Arizona, except it has an H.
Right.
T-E-M-P-E-H.
Okay, well, we have about a minute and a half left, so I'd like to thank my guests, Betsy Shipley and Gunter Pfaff. Thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. And, you know, it's amazing because I have a minute and a half left, and we've been just going on and on and on. Sometimes we get that moment where we take a break real quick. There was no break in this because this was just really, really exciting. And hopefully the next time I'm back on, well, probably not that soon, but nonetheless, I will be making my own. Because once I come up to visit you guys, I'm going to be making my own. So with that, as usual, I always have to give my shout-outs to everyone that made this possible, specifically Zach Henkel, you know, my resident producer and our Vista volunteer. Thank you, Zach. Marilyn Welker, who is the executive director of Simply Living. Always have to give her a shout-out. And, oh, hey, how about that main engineer, Eugene Beer? And, oh, next week, my guest should be Evan Davis. So stay tuned for that one. That one's going to be a real kicker. Anyway, you know what's happening this weekend. It's the Hot Times Community Music and Art Festival. Come on down, check it out. As a matter of fact, there's something there for everyone. Sunday is always my favorite day, only because it's the Listen for the Jazz, and that's led by none other than Gene Walker. And if you want to see some real heavy hitter jazz artists, that's the place to be. So with that, I'm Dano. This is Talk of the Town, and I'm out. Have a great day.